Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on Thursday, March 1st. The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133. My name is Jackie Balestra, and I'm sitting in as host this week for Joe Terry. Thank you so much for tuning in. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and I can't imagine a better place to do just that. Now, you can find out more about us on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit the website at www.thesouthbayshow.com. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And our guests this morning are comedians Cindy Shields, Karen Bankhead, Katie Love, and Dan Watt, Executive Director and Founder of the Art Attack Foundation. Now, Dan Watt's fascination with careers and lives of amazing and legendary people started years ago while he was a boy growing up in Cleveland, Ohio. He would rush home from school to watch the Merv Griffin and Phil Donahue shows instead of playing with his friends. Dan worked at the Palace Theater in downtown Cleveland, where he was hired to assist such celebrities as Sheeta Rivera, Shirley MacLaine, Smokey Robertson, Turner, Ann Margaret, Andy Williams, and so many others while they were performing there. Dan moved to L.A. to further his career in show business and theater and worked at the Torrance Cultural Arts Center for 10 years, bringing in such legends as Carol Channing, Spike Lee, Glenn Campbell, astronaut Sally Ride, Hal Holbrook, and Cheech Marin. Dan has choreographed and produced over 60 full-scale productions. For 15 years, he was the stage producer and entertainment manager for Dream Halloween, a pediatric AIDS benefit, where he has worked with Taylor Swift, Jamie Lee Curtis, and the late great Elizabeth Taylor and Doris Roberts. Dance and Dan Productions, Dan's own company, produced Dixie Carter, the cabaret, and Be Author's Tony-nominated show, Just Between Friends, and an intimate evening with Melissa Manchester to the South Bay. Dan is also the executive director and founder of the Art Attack Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to nurturing talent through scholarships, education, training, stage performances, and other cultural activities. He worked at Columbia Pictures in the development department and at SYCO Production, Simon Cowell's production company, for 5 years before branching out into documentary, film, and television. Now, Cindy Shields grew up in Torrance and still lives there with her family. Her performing career spans over 40 years, and she is a sought-after actress here in the South Bay. Her last big musical was Sister Act with the Torrance Theater Company, and she played the rapping nun, Sister Mary Lazarus. Empty Nest Grief spawned her stand-up career 7 years ago, and since then she has become a popular MC and headliner. She performs regularly all over L.A. and has worked with greats such as Fritz Kroelman, Chris Kattan, Craig Shoemaker, Drew Lynch, Wendy Liebman, and more. By day, Cindy is an actress in commercials, television, and webisodes. She also teaches kids acting and improv at the Actors Place, a local after-school theater arts program. Now, Cindy is still a PTA mom and continues to serve on the Torrance Council PTA in foster care outreach and is in her 15th year as entertainment coordinator for the Torrance Relay for Life. Volunteering and performing are her greatest joys. Karen Bankhead has appeared in several stage, screen, and film projects, including Curb Your Enthusiasm, I Am Sam, Gilmore Girls, Will and Grace, The Bernie Mac Show, The Jamie Foxx Show, and more. She was a member of the Groundlings Sunday Company and has studied and performed with Second City. Having written several screen and stage plays, Karen is also a spokesperson for Adopt-Us Kids and is having a ball performing at corporate, church, and comedy venues. However, Karen could not be with us today, so she sent her alter ego, Miss Etta Mae Mumphries. Now, Etta Mae is part of the award-winning one-woman show, The VO5 Experience, performed at the HBO Workspace, San Francisco Fringe, Comedy Central Showcase, Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival, and was an official selection at the United International Solo Fest in New York City. Katie Love began her comedy career at the famed Holy City Zoo in San Francisco, where she performed for 2 hours in the wee hours of the morning. She performed for two drunks in the wee hours of the morning. Now, several years later, and with no visible signs of aging, Katie performs at such venues as the Comedy Store, Hollywood Improv, Laugh Factory, and Flappers. She is the creator, producer, and host of The Katie Love Show, a live comedy talk show. Katie is a former Los Angeles Times writer, author of the novel Cubicide, and the forthcoming memoir Knock Knock, Growing Up Jehovah's Witness. Katie resides in Los Angeles with a 20-pound cat and no regrets. So Karen, Cindy, and Katie are a few of the featured performers in the upcoming Chicks and Giggles, a night of clean comedy on Friday, March 2nd at 8 p.m. at the Hermosa Playhouse. Now, this show is to raise money for Art Attack's Adopt-A-Kid Community Outreach Program, which offers free theater in all areas of the arts to those less fortunate in the community who would otherwise never have a chance to experience it. Karen, Cindy, Katie, Dan, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining me this morning and being patient through that introduction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was lovely. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay, good. The gang's all here. So we're going to start out with you, Dan. Tell me about the Art Attack Foundation. What was the impetus to create a nonprofit, and when did you launch it?
This is our 15th year, and I used to be I started out as a dancer in my career, and then I started working at the South Bay Conservatory, and I noticed that there were a lot of kids who had so much talent but just didn't have the means to take the classes in all areas of the arts to, you know, reach their full potential. So I thought, well, why not create a scholarship program? Because I was so lucky that while I was training and growing up, I was always offered scholarships, or I wouldn't have been able to do it. I remember my mom and dad telling me, we can pay for three classes a week. The rest is up to you. So I thought I had to give back. So I started the Art Attack Foundation, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And here we are 15 years later, still raising monies, and we have supported kids across the country. And then it branched off from scholarships to exactly what this program is here. We call it Adopt-A-Kid because I realized when I worked at the Torrance Cultural Arts Center that there were kids, the kids that came to the theater were with their grandmas or their parents. And there were so many that didn't have the opportunity or family members that could take them to the theater. And I thought, you know, I wanted to get that audience in there too, the kids that have never been there. So I created Adopt-A-Kid where anybody in the community, a business or an individual, can buy a ticket to a show, and then we give it out to kids at the Boys and Girls Clubs, the elementary schools. We always invite the battered women's shelters, the YMCAs. So we invite kids that have never been there before to come to the theater. And these amazing women are doing this fundraiser for me on Friday. And all the money we raise there will go towards that production so that we can cover the cost of the theater and the artist, and there's no cost to the kids or the families, and they get to experience their first live stage show ever in a 500-seat theater, the Armstrong Theater, and then they meet the cast in a question and answer afterwards.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me. Because on this show, we've had just about every nonprofit in the South Bay on this show. And it never ceases to amaze me how people just step up like this. Did you have any experience in running, in setting up a nonprofit, running a nonprofit? Did you have any experience in this?
No, not at all. I just knew that I needed to do something because I wouldn't have ended up where I was with my in my career and had the opportunities if I wouldn't have had scholarships and from different studios and different corporations. And I just thought, let's do it. So I bought a book on how to create a nonprofit. I sat in my family room and cried for hours and hours trying to figure out the 150 pages you have to fill out. But then I was got involved with the Dream Halloween that you mentioned, that the Pediatric AIDS Benefit. I donated my time there to help them put their stage show together. And I told them about it, and luckily there were people on their board that said, let us help you through this. So they helped me fill out the paperwork, and I submitted it, and boom, we were accepted and approved 15 years ago, and here I am still going.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I understand that Cheetah Rivera is involved in this.
Yeah, she's actually our chairperson. When I first originally started the program, Bea Arthur came on as the chairperson. And then when she passed away, she was great friends with Cheetah Rivera. So I just cold called Cheetah Rivera and said, would you step in? And she's like, I don't know who you are, but if you're a friend of Bee's, I'll do it. So she's been on board as the chairperson for the last 7 years, I think. And she actually just did a benefit for us in New York City at the famous Birdland Jazz Club. We got the leads from 15 different Broadway shows and her, and we raised money for our scholarship fund. She donated her time, called her friends, and boom, we did a show.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, how many fundraisers do you do each year?
It depends on how much money we need. This year we need a little bit more help than usual. Toyota used to sponsor this program, the Adopt-A-Kid program, but they've left the city of mm-hmm. Torrance, and they were so gracious to us for the first 11 years or 12 years sponsoring this show, where they covered the cost of everything, but they had to put up guidelines. And what they do is they donate mainly to the nonprofits in the state that their corporate office is located in, and they're in Texas now. And I just couldn't stop this program because they didn't, you know, they couldn't sponsor it. So it's kind of like starting all over again. It's like knocking on doors, and I, you know, beg these amazingly talented women to come on board and let's do a night of comedy to raise money to cover that program. So, but we are going, you know, I'm going out to anybody again. It's like, you know, asking my neighbor, is there any way you could buy two tickets to sponsor two kids? And they're like, of course. So instead of having Toyota cover the whole thing, we're banding together, and I'm getting, you know, 100 people or 200 people and these ladies to do a show to cover the cost so that these kids can get to see a show.
Well, you know, Toyota has left a big gaping hole in the South Bay. They sponsored a lot of nonprofit org,
yeah.
And we were sad to see them go. And as you said, it's like starting all over. It's awful. Hopefully, some big company will move into that campus and you know, step in and help out where Toyota used to. Now, this Chicks and Giggles event, is that an annual event or do you do different things each year?
Well, we do different fundraisers all the time, but I'm. Adore Cindy Shields, and her and I have been talking about this. I've always wanted to do a night of comedy with female comedians. I find their humor, I don't know if I should say this on the radio, a little bit more intelligent. I just always wanted to do a night. So I reached out to Cindy, and we've been talking about it for like 3 years. And I said, why don't we do this? And she said, okay. And I said, let's just pick a date. And we picked a date, and then she reached out to other comedians that she had worked with, and these ladies said, of course we will. So here we are. I don't know, Cindy, wasn't it just 6 weeks ago we put this together? I mean, we went to
yes.
different comedy shows and
yes.
saw, and then boom, here we are.
And I was out in Claremont with Flappers, and I had Dan and I were trying to think of different comics, you know, for the show, and I worked with Katie, and I'm thinking, hey, wait a minute. And so I'm so happy to have worked with her, because the next day I'm like, hey, Katie.
I'm happy to do it. So excited. It's a great opportunity,
well, Cindy,
and it's for such a good cause, and you're a love bug. So I have such a girl crush on Cindy Shields. She's just
Katie, you're in line. Shut up.
Well, I second that emotion.
Sorry,
Cindy,
after
that's okay. That's okay. Don't worry about it. Cindy, now, reading your bio, you're not only an actor and comedian, you also do musical theater, which means you can sing. So I'm just curious, your background, which discipline did you begin with, and how did your skills evolve? Did you start as a dancer, as a singer, how did you start?
I started in high school. I'd always wanted to be a dancer. I was an only child. My mom didn't drive, so I spent a lot of time in my room with my television, just watching Hollywood Palace, all the great variety shows, and auditioned for a show in high school to be a dancer. I couldn't believe it. I got in. And in the cast, I made a very dear friend. His name was Rick, who became my mentor, dance teacher. He kept casting me in leads in his shows. I had no idea what I was doing. I still don't, but people are still very nice to me and keep casting me. But it was 40 years of theater, and I did train with dance and vocals, and basically it was on-the-job training with the acting. From there, it went into Groundlings classes, and I had doing some commercials in the 90s, but I had my little family and my parents were still alive, so very much wanted to, they were my obvious priority, and they still are. And then, as you said, when my kids were graduating from high school, by the time my daughter did, there's only 3 years apart, I kind of fell apart. I was lost, depressed, and a dear friend who kept saying, you know, you really need to do stand-up. I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, you know, God has a very precious sense of humor, and it was very healing. I took classes. I cried on the way to class, and it was just the most amazing experience, and God really used it to get me kind of back on my feet, and I can't believe my life now, what I get to do. From stand-up, I got an agent, and now I'm doing commercials and different projects, and I'm like, wow, I thought my life was over. So, yeah, and I get to be on the radio with all you cool people. What the heck is that?
Well, technically, it's a podcast, not radio. It's a podcast, but
podcast
is the way of the world. Nobody
listens.
Nobody listens to terrestrial radio anymore. So,
Edna May. Edna May. I'm on this podcast.
You're on a podcast. That's right. I want to talk to Edna May because her friend Karen couldn't be here today. Edna May, tell me about the VO5 experience.
Oh, well, that was, can you hear me okay? I'm a little old-fashioned. I don't know about part nothing. I'm just talking on the phone for a minute. But, yes, the VO5, I got to be a part of that because my friend Karen, who can't be with us, but she was, and Cindy said a good thing, and I can just plug away with Cindy Shields because she's just my heart, and I even had to change my bus ticket to make sure I could be in town Friday for this big event. And only for Cindy would I cash in with the Greyhound. But it's a good thing. And so when Karen did the VO5, she was actually in a bad state of mind about Hollywood and being a person of color and trying to be black enough and sassy enough, you know, all that stuff that they do in showbiz and trying to get an agent, all that business. So she wrote herself a story, and she wanted somebody that could encourage her at the end of the play and she looked at this special called Bubbling Brown Sugar, African-American Women in Entertainment from the 1920s to the now, something like that. And lo and behold, she found herself acquainted with somebody like me, Etta Mae Mumphries, who maybe you don't know my name. I'm not as famous as I would have liked to be, but I have a story about everybody, from Sammy Davis Jr. to Josephine Baker to Billie Holiday. Josephine Baker used to dance and sway around with them bananas on her behind. Y'all remember? And somebody had to tell her. I said, "Honey, you can't be running around half naked in St. Louis with bananas on your behind like that. You need to go overseas. Go to Paris." And that is what I, Etta Mae Mumphries, said to Josephine Baker way back when. And she got out in the ocean liner, like you say, and she never looked back. And the rest is history. So that's how I got on the stage, because I can tell you a story, and I tell people you got to keep your head up so you can let your hair down and just give you some positive things to hold on to in spite of what the world may be turning against you every which way. So that's where I came into to the story.
Wow. Did you also do the fan dance?
Oh, I showed her that, because she was showing too many of her tiny bits, and I said, "Don't give them the whole shebang. Don't give them the whole enchilada. Just a little bit of salsa on the side." Somebody had to tell her. So I told her, don't give it all. Hold some back. So, yeah, I gave her the fan dance. I gave her the bananas, and she just ran with it. You know, and even today, Beyonce got that thing with the hand, put a ring on it, with the hand, twitch, twitch. She saw me do that because I was showing off all my rings. I got a ring on every finger but the right one. And she took that and ran with it, and the rest is history. So there's a lot of folks. Peggy Lee was a friend of mine, and she said she wanted to tell everybody how she met a man, made her real hot, feel like he gave her measles. And I said, "Wait a minute, Peggy Lee, that don't sound right at all. Just say fever. Leave it at that. Just say he gave you fever." She wrote that song. There's a lot of people. So Etta Mae Mumphries came out of that, and I like to, sometimes I sit down, sometimes I stand up with my hurricane and I tell my stories, and people always want, because just like, Cindy can tell you how the Lord works things out, and he worked it out so I can still entertain at my age and stay positive, I have to be positive. Even my blood type is B positive, so can't help it.
Well, I hope you receive credit for all of these things.
Well,
and you're getting residual,
you know what?
At least.
Are we who? Residual? I don't know nothing about. I'm not a very good businesswoman. That's one. I have to. Maybe y'all can hook me up with a good accountant. Because, I tell folks they got a TV show. It's a have and have nots. It's not just a TV show, because some of us are in the have not. But thank God for the 99-cent store. That's all I can say. But I keep hope alive. I may cash in one day. My big Hollywood payday is coming around. I tell you that. I believe that.
Well, tell me something, Etta Mae. Does anyone still use VO5?
Oh, well, I do. I put it under. I got to wear a wig sometime when it's convenient. But, oh, yes, you'd be surprised. You can find VO5 if you have to bug them over at the store. It works just fine. I ain't found nothing better. So the VO5, it has something to do with thou hast anointed my head with oil. You know how they say that in the Bible, a little good connection to that. But I can find some VO5 and my powder, aspirin, and even Jericho. I had to fuss at CVS because they stopped carrying it. I said, "Y'all don't bring it back. I'm going to Walgreens." And that's the truth. So I got my Geritol, my Ginkgo Biloba. It's good stuff.
Dan, I want to go back to we touched on it just a little bit ago about planning a fundraiser like this, and I wanted to know where you started, and you explained that you had wanted to do a show with women at. Generally speaking, when you're planning something, do you start with a concept in mind, like an old woman show or specific performers or something else? In this case, you explained that you wanted to do the old woman show, you knew Cindy, and it went from there. But the name of this show is Chicks and Giggles, A Night of Clean Comedy. What do you mean by clean comedy?
Well, I think the jokes are, you know, and again, I give credit to, you know, the amazing women. There's going to be some blue humor, and I know Miss Katie is going to give us tell us some wonderful stories about her dating life, which
uh-oh.
I can't wait. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to make sure that sometimes people can use curse words too often, you know, and I think that, and again, this is why I was drawn to the women comedians. I think that you can get the same message across and tell the same story and not have to rely on certain words constantly. Not that they're not going to say, you know, a few curse words here and there, but I think that you can tell a story and be blue and be off color, and still get the point across, dropping the F-bomb every third word, because sometimes I think it's just thrown in there for effect and it doesn't really move the joke and the story along. So Cindy and I wanted to find, you know, some very brilliant comedians that did that, and we had this amazing lineup that are going to just, you know, tell their stories, and they're, you know, you don't have to hear the explicit details of some things. Cindy might be able to elaborate better on that.
No, well, I got to tell you something. I have to, I couldn't agree with you more, Dan. You know, just quick story. Growing up, you know, I loved Joan Rivers. I thought she was hysterical. Oh. I used to watch her on the Johnny Carson show and all the other shows. I loved watching her on TV. Fast forward many years later, after I moved to Los Angeles, I went to see her perform at one of the big comedy clubs, and I was absolutely horrified. I was horrified. All of the cursing, every other word was a curse word. I wasn't expecting that. You know, for TV, you have to keep it clean. And so I was just shocked. And to me, it seemed like a cheap way, a way to get a cheap laugh, a cheap way to get a laugh. And you know, I'm not a prude. All right, but I prefer a well placed curse for emphasis. You know, there are places you can throw it in here and there, but you have to be clever to do PG rated comedy. Now, Karen, how hard is it to do clean comedy?
Oh, okay, Karen's here. I'll let Edna Mae take a little break, but you know what? For me, because. And she had to take a little nap in the middle of the podcast. But for me, I mean, it's not that hard because I can't say 90%, I mean 100% of the time, but I don't curse regularly. But I feel, so I don't worry about words slipping out usually. And, I mean, I've done cruise ships or watched comedians on cruise ships, and usually on, you know, on that kind of gig, they have to have their family-friendly show at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and then afterward at 10 o'clock, they come along with their not-so-set, you know, their blue set. And I watch them, and I'm like, okay, if you just did a really great set for however long and didn't use any words, why are you using, like you said, every other word? And like Dan said, if it's not well-placed, it's just noise, and it's to me, it's offensive. And I think, you know, a lot of people feel like, even women, and that's why this is so great that Dan and Cindy are doing this, because I've seen a lot of my favorite female comedians get out there and just talk about stuff that, you know, like, it's like, sweetheart, TMI, and I don't want to know all of that about every bit of you. And so it's not clever, and it's not funny to me, and it's not smart. So there's so many things we have. I mean, the world is our oyster and our stage. You know, we can pick stuff to talk about.
Again, with these women, but I think, you know, Katie is one of the examples where, you know, she can do her show both ways. She, you know, Katie's going to tell us stories about her love life, and you can, you know, like we've all been saying, you can place a word here and there to get the point across and to get the laugh, but, you know, you're going to hear a well-rounded, you're going to hear a full story of, you know, of her dating life. And Katie, you can fill us in. I mean, how's your dating life going? And, you know, you don't need to be and sometimes, you know, the word is used so much that after 5 minutes, you don't care anymore. And so it's like Karen was just saying, then why is it needed? Why does it, you know? So Katie, fill us in on your love life.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the silence that you hear right now is intentional about my dating life. Anyway, I hear what you're saying about the misplaced curse words, and it's interesting because I was sitting down with one of my favorite comedy writers and friends, J. Christopher Sloan, and we went to Denny's, which we call our writer's room, and we had some pancakes, and I just wanted to look through my set and punch some stuff up, and he's really great at that, and you know, we help each other sometimes with stuff like that, and I was really excited to do it. And there's one joke that I was just like, how am I going to get around not using this word? And I tried it a bunch of ways, and then I thought to myself, you know, I can either not do the joke or I can do it with confidence with this well-placed word, which I believe I will, and I think the audience is going to be okay. I really think it's important to, in any realm of creativity, to really speak from your core. All of these stories, as goofy as they are, they're true stories. And they came, some of them came from, you know, deeply disturbing dates. And then other disappointments. One joke took me, it was so harrowing for me, that it took me a year to write the joke. And I wanted to do a joke about it, and I invited my friend Chris again to breakfast and said, I want to tell you the story that happened in this joke that I've written about it. And while I was telling him the joke and I was laughing, I was crying. Because I said, it took a year for me to write this joke. Because there was a sense of shame about what happened in that situation. But I think it's an extremely funny joke. And it says so much about what we as comedians are giving from that stage. And actors, too. In fact, any artist that, you know, you're giving from life experience. And I've said this so many times that artists are the historians of our time. And so whether you're a writer or a painter, sculptor, dancer, prancer, whatever it is that you're doing that's creatively expressed, it's coming from a very real place. And I think when you stand on that stage, you have a responsibility to the people that are sitting in those seats. And they got off their couch, in their car, found parking. You know, hopefully they put some clean clothes on. They combed their hair. They're in that seat because they want to be entertained and because they trust you. And they're trusting you to entertain them. We don't know what's happening to them in their life. And I think it's an honor to stand on that stage. Now, whether I always do comedy from a place of honor, I wish I was that evolved. But I just want to say that I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, I think it's an honorable place to stand on a stage with a mic or, you know, whatever it is you're doing to express yourself in the arts is something that I can't get out of my system as much as I've tried. So, y'all be telling my story.
You know something, Katie, I'm gonna expand on that in a minute, but I need to take a short station break. I'm Jackie Balestra. You're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight. And today we're talking about the upcoming Chicks and Giggles, A Night of Clean Comedy. It's tomorrow night, Friday, March 2nd at 8 p.m. at the Hermosa Playhouse. Their show is to raise money for Art Attack's Adopt-A-Kid Community Outreach Program. If you'd like to learn more on that, you can visit the website at artattackfoundation.org. That's artattackfoundation.org. And, the show is tomorrow night at the Hermosa Playhouse. And a little later on, we're going to talk about tickets and stuff. Katie, you mentioned it. In the intro, you have a writing background. You were a writer for the LA Times, and you wrote a novel and a memoir. And now I'm a writer, and I've written several humorous articles, which have been, you know, published in papers and magazines. And I know how hard it is to get it right on paper. When you're doing humor, it's a very specific thing. How is that different writing for stand-up comedy?
Well, interestingly enough, I write my entire set out as if it was you know, an essay. And then I walk around with this, you know, 4 or 5 page manifesto that I then, you know, whittle down into what we call a set list that is a scrawled, really frightening thing. If you ever want to feel a chill up your spine, look at a comics notebook. And the little words, and it looks like really frightening, like, you know, serial killer slash perhaps a physician writing. But I start off with that. I always write it like a story because I believe that comedy is storytelling. And there's all types of, you know, different comedians, but that's how I start. I would say the biggest difference is that your story, you know, has a, doesn't always have a beginning, middle, and end, but I always try to write jokes with that in mind. It kind of just comes natural to me. But it's just, it seems like such a natural progression to me as a storyteller to get on stage, speak these words, and I love those events where, like, you know, the moth and poetry slams, and I love to see the written word spoken. I think it's just a really, I think it's a very natural and eloquent progression from the paper to the audience.
Well, you know, I imagine that everybody has a different process. And Cindy, what's your process?
Well, I'll get punchlines sometimes out of the blue, and then I have to figure out telling a story to get to that punchline. Or, like, I'll be in a situation where I'll just make an observation about something that strikes me funny. Like, I was at the dentist, and I'm still working this into the act, and the dentist offered gift cards. It's like, well, that'd be a heavy gift. Hey, Joey, you've been a good boy. Yay. Let's get a cleaning. I mean, I don't know. But this is funny. But I find I'll get inspiration at some of the worst times, and I'll either have to pull over in my car, or if I get a lot of inspiration if I just, like, relax at a concert, in the theater, watching a show, and I'm, like, scribbling notes on my shopping list, my programs. I'll get, like, punchline inspiration. I'll wake up with punchlines. It's the craziest life I never saw coming. And my house is filled with little pieces of paper with punchlines. And then you just, it's the discipline, which is for me the D word, to focus, which is my F word. And just, it's like a big jigsaw puzzle going from A to B and going back to A a little bit and then keep on going. It's so much fun. It's scary. It's a little stressful. It's most incredible life. I love it.
It sounds chaotic.
Well,
it sounds a little chaotic.
Well, the thing is, you don't just sit down and say, well, it's time to be inspired now. No. You have, it's a discipline where it's like, okay, you've got a show coming up. We've got to bring it up to date. What are we going to talk about? And for me, I need to be working with my hands to get my brain stimulated. So I'm constantly doing dishes or petting my dog or anything to work with my hands. And then I relax, and then the juices start flowing, and you kind of go from A to B. And by nature, I'm a writer, and I love to write. But with jokes, you've got to get to the punchline sooner the better. So it's that's been an interesting challenge to just, you know, get to the point quicker. And so as chaotic as it sounds, it can be very boring. And you write something, and then from then on, you edit. You rework it. You have this body of material that you're constantly trying to fine-tune. And then you add new stuff. So it's very exciting. But it just takes discipline, and sometimes it can be very boring, and it's just you staring down a blank computer, like, all right. So
you know, it's funny that you mentioned the dentist gift cards, because I've seen that. I'm seeing that at all sorts of medical offices and stuff. And the first time I saw that, I laughed out loud. I guffawed, actually. I was like, really?
I did too.
No. I want to stay on this for a minute about where you get your material from. I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles, I discovered the grocery store aisle for ethnic foods, and when I was growing up, we didn't have an ethnic foods aisle where I grew up. All right, so I'm looking at all the Mexican items, and right next to the taco shells and the refried beans are religious candles, and they're still there. The grocery store I go to, in the ethnic foods aisle next to the taco shells, are religious candles. And the first time I saw that, I bust out laughing. In the middle of the grocery, I was by myself, I bust out laughing, and I thought, this is like a scene out of a TV comedy. I'm thinking, oh my God, let's start with you. So where do you have those moments, the gift card, the dentist gift card, or the religious candles moment? Is that where you start?
Well, don't knock the candles, because I got one burning on my bathroom counter right now. Saint Gabriel, I'm just asking him for a few more dollars. But all the time, because, you know, it depends. Like, if I have it depends. That's another, you know, if you want to talk about my bathroom habits, I can throw in you know, sometimes you want to joke about things that are real. And I commend, you know, Katie, because when people talk about the what's really happening, that's the honesty. I mean, comedy, when coming from honesty, is usually the funniest, because you're not trying to be jokey and pull something out and, you know, and be fake. But you say, you know, I went out on... If I talk about going to the doctor, for instance, a lot of people my age, and, you know, we just talk about how silly the doctor is telling you, you know, what's your name and who's the president, and I just tell them, if you don't know by now, I can't tell you. You know, you just find a way to find humor out of stuff that might be uncomfortable. And so you just walking around, you know, you find stuff when I talk about my Metamucil, my Geritol, that's rooted in the truth, you know, and so I'm telling you,
literally,
if you live your
literally
life,
rooted.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I gotta get myself together before I can do anything. But and I want to thank you, Dan, because I had a beautiful day yesterday. I went around some seniors, and I was going to tell my jokes and my stories, but they taught me, because they had stuff to say, and I have material now based on how they spoke. One woman I talked about, you know, I was trying to be nice and say, anybody here served our country in the Marines or the Navy or the Air Force? And this one lady said, no, but I was married to one of each. And I said, oh, my goodness, I got some material. I can talk. She had a sailor, an airman, and a soldier under her belt. So, you know, you walking around, that's the best material. I told her, I said, thank you for your service. And I was trying to get her to tell me which one was better with the artillery, but we didn't go that deep into it. But you know, you have to find your material based on how you live. In fact, I copped out, you know, when I was talking, when Karen used to try to talk about her personal life, that's how I came into being, because it was easier to talk about old stuff and old people, and I was Taylor, like if I'm around more young people. Speaking of Taylor, like you work with Taylor Swift, and you know, I might have a few stories about her, or if I'm working and there's more Latino people in the audience, then I might throw out, you know, somebody like Ricky Martin or Ricky Ricardo. I have to, you know, and then I have to think about, well, what's funny about them, and, you know, we lost Fats Domino recently, and, you know, I tried to tell him my story about him, and he used to say, I found my keys on Blueberry Hill. And I told him, no, Fats Domino, why don't you just say you found your thrills? That sounds more entertaining. And he wrote that song, We Never Look Back, and the rest is history.
Again, I hope you are getting credit for all of this, Etta Mae. I hope you're getting credit for this. Katie, where do you? What are some of your favorite sources for material?
All I have to do is go on to online dating and see what's out there, and I don't have to do much. I mean, it sort of just appears. I love some of the audacity of the whole dating experience, and the things that people actually say to me is so funny, or the things that they will write to me. One of my favorite things that I see in online advertising, because that's really what it is online human advertising. Hi, I'm a human, and this is my brochure, and please date me. Please love me. Here's my brochure. One of my favorite things is I like a woman who looks as, and I don't know why this needs some kind of twang to it, but I can't say it in a normal voice, but it's, I like a woman who looks as good in a dress as she does a pair of jeans. Well, I like a guy that doesn't fart and burp at the same time, but that doesn't mean my dream's going to come true. So I just think that it just presents itself. But, you know, again, as Etta Mae said, in the interactions, and Cindy also said that, you know, you'll just be out and about and things start happening. And I do want that dental gift card, Cindy, if you have it, because I do need a cleaning, and that's expensive. So whoever has a dental gift card, I actually want that. And you guys can laugh, but I actually want it, and I want you guys to pull those together and hand those to me on Friday.
So, I'll make it happen.
Everybody bring your medical gift cards for each other. It's funny. One of my nephews, he was always a funny guy, and he thought about doing stand-up, maybe trying stand-up here and there, and it wasn't until he had his first child that he had there was so much about it that he found so humorous, and it provided him with so much material that he actually started doing it, you know, a side thing, not professionally, just, you know, every so often at one of the clubs. But throughout the course of the day, you know, just dealing with a new baby. So let's go through each of the ladies here. How has your humor changed with as your life situations have changed, you know, from being single to being married, from, you know, not having kids to having kids, different jobs? How let's continue with you, Katie. How has yours changed?
Well, I think it's really interesting that when I, you know, sit back and analyze my comedy, a part of me goes, man, when am I going to find my guy? I mean, where is he? And then I go, well, I'm middle-aged. I started this in my 30s, and now I'm not in my 30s anymore. Though, as I mentioned in the bio, there are no visible signs of aging. Anyhow, because I live in Los Angeles, so no one ages. But
right,
I had
right.
to take a look at that, like, what is it to still be a sexually confident woman who feels like she's still in her sexual peak? And, you know, you may or may not be getting your AARP card in the mail. So it's awkward and it's weird and it's funny to me. And yet when some guy approaches me that's in his, you know, 20s or early 30s, I'm like, no, we have nothing in common. Wait, maybe we do. No. And I have this like struggle to remind myself, honey, no. We got to stay focused on picture here, which might be an actual relationship. And then I thought, what really will happen once I get the guy, whoever he is, wherever he is? I don't know where he is. In fact, I wrote a sitcom about finding a guy in a hardware store, and I'm pretty excited about pitching that right now, because it I went to a hardware store and I needed some copies of Keys, and I saw these beautiful men walking around. I was like, oh, what? This is where they all are. They're at the hardware store. Oh, my God.
The mother moon.
And from that came a whole sitcom that I literally, like Cindy, you know, I took the receipt from getting these keys made and I turned it over and I literally just wrote the whole, like, 5-point outline and then went home and did the treatment, and I am pitching it. It's, you know, it's it'll be really interesting to me once some guy, you know, doesn't run to the hills, because when they find out you're a comedian, they're like, don't put me in the act. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
you'd be an idiot, because then I don't have to put you in the act.
Katie, I'm going to give you a tip. You want some material on men.
I want it. I want the tip, and I want the dental card. Yes. I should marry a dentist. That's what I need. I need a dentist, a mechanic, and a chiropractor, and an agent, and it needs to be all in the same man, I guess, unless I – wow, that would get complicated. So, anyway, I'm ready for my tip.
I'll tell you something. I discovered this years ago, and all of you should do this. Go to any grocery store an hour before the Super Bowl. All right?
Ooh,
the place,
okay.
they are crawling with men with carts stacked with cases of beer and chips and cheese dip and sausages. Every year and I videotape it. And I post it on social media because it is the funniest thing. Because I do all of the shopping and cooking in my family, so I'm the only one that goes to the grocery store. And an hour before Super Bowl, trust me on this.
I love this, and I have an
trust
idea.
Me.
Why not? So next year, I want to be walking up to strange men with their carts full, and then I want to just talk to them about what they plan on doing with these ingredients and who's coming to the party and who's single and who's not. And then depending on how gourmet the cart is, that's how I will choose my next victim, I mean man, a boyfriend. I think that's a good show. You can just follow me around and I will embarrass you if that's okay on your next project for the Super Bowl. And I think we'll find me a husband
that day. I love
that. That's what's going to happen.
Cindy, you know, you mentioned that you got into comedy after your kids were, you had empty nest syndrome. So have you seen how your comedy has evolved through the various changes in life?
Well, you know, as an actor, when I started this whole Magilla 40 years ago, I mean, I've gone from being single to married to a mama to a daughter who lost her parents to kids growing up. So in terms of my acting, it's definitely given me a lot more breadth and width and depth. But as a comedian, I have to say, I was so broken when I started this, that it in terms of being really anxious about performing, now it's like I'm still nervous. Of course, I think we all get the jitters, but there's now a sense of, at this age, what do I have to lose? If I can survive a horrible depression where I, you know, it got pretty bad at times, and I'm like, am I really going to make it through this? So to kind of get through that, now that whole fear factor has completely changed for me. It's like, just go for it. What have you got to lose? And in terms of material, oh my gosh, just dealing with my kids' lives and their love lives, and they're entertainers as well, and just kind of watching their journey. And, you know, I'm a diabetic now. Woohoo! So there's that. And health changes and being married to just this most precious man on the earth. And, you know, his health is changing. And we've been married 31 years. So our marriage. bad things, but, you know, we're still together, and we laugh about how our bodies, we just don't recognize ourselves in the mirror anymore, and it's just funny. And so, yeah, it's being able to conquer your stage fright and that terrible fear. And once you can kind of get through that hurdle, it's like, bring it on. It's very empowering. And then, you know, you have your next gig and you start getting nervous about that. So there's just a lot of anxiety in comedy, okay? I'm just going to say it. Am I right, Katie? Am I right?
I hear you. Well, okay, well, gosh, this hour just flew by. Dan, who are some of the other performers tomorrow night?
We have Gayla Johnson, and we also have Helen Hung.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Gayla's been
okay,
on.
Now,
Go ahead. Well, Gayla is also an actress and has been on Will and Grace, The Gilmore Girls, Curb Your Enthusiasm. She was on a Showtime
special. That's me!
Special. No. Yeah. Fierce Funny Women. And Helen has been all over the place, and she's got a great show with the NPR, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And she was just up in, ladies, help me, was it the Montreal Comedy Festival? Is it in Canada like a week ago? And she
just
was one of their headliners. Was it Montreal?
Just for laughs.
I think that's what you said.
And she had she was one of the closing acts, and she sold out both the shows, so they had to add two more. So I'm just lucky that I have so many talented and amazing women that came on board to help with this. So I'm really honored and blessed that they're helping out.
Well,
are you kidding?
Okay. So, are there any tickets left? How much are tickets?
Yeah, the tickets are $20, and the best place to get them is at, like you said, at our website, theartattackfoundation.org. We're also going to have a silent auction in the lobby. I've gotten some wonderful things. Betty White donated some stuff from the zoo and autographed her book, and some local restaurants have come together. And so we'll have a silent auction to raise a little bit more money. We'll be selling wine in the lobby for those who needed to get through the day.
or through the axe.
Or through the set, yes. But you guys don't have to buy it.
We can bring our own.
I love this. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be a fantastic show. I want to thank all of you. Karen Bankhead, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And Etta Mae Mumphrey, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, it's just in time for Price is Right. I'm going to turn it on. Thank you.
And Cindy Shields, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun. Thank you.
And you can tell people you've been on a podcast. Katie Love. Katie Love, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I really had fun with you guys, and let's have a great show.
I'm sure we will. And Dan Watts, thank you for pulling all of this together and being on the show this morning.
Yay!
Oh, no, thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been great. It was a lot of fun. I could talk another hour and listen to these ladies.
All right, one more time. I'm just going to give out the website again, theartattackfoundation.org, artattackfoundation.org. It's Chicks and Giggles, a night of clean comedy tomorrow night, Friday, March 2nd, at the Hermosa Playhouse. And I'm just a note for tomorrow's show. Tomorrow on the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, our guest will be James William Potts. Jim is going to be conducting an active shooter seminar on Monday, March 5th at 10 a.m. at the Manhattan Beach Library. We're going to discuss this timely and very heartbreaking topic. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's always a pleasure. That's our show, everybody. Be sure to tune in tomorrow from Manhattan Beach 360. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.